Outkick the coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
All right, several different things we are tracking for you here as we enter into the final hour of the week here on Outkick. The big trade with Carson Wentz moving to the Indianapolis Colts from the Philadelphia Eagles. We have been discussing it a great deal. In fact, it is our poll question. You can go vote in it. Let's see. Over 10,000 of you have voted so far this morning. I asked a simple question. Who won the Carson Wentz trade? 64% of you are saying the Colts did with Carson Wentz. 36% of you are saying the Eagles did with draft picks. Now, I think the Colts won this trade because I understand their path to a playoff berth and or a championship a lot more than I do the Eagles. That doesn't mean necessarily that the Eagles can't end up in a better spot than the Colts. But when I see this trade, I think to myself, okay, Carson Wentz, best season he ever had before he tore his ACL, 33 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. He was on pace to be the MVP of the NFL in 2017. Who was his offensive coordinator? Frank Reich. So nobody probably out there in the NFL has been any more successful with Carson Wentz than Frank Reich has. And he's saying for a third round pick and a second rounder that can turn into a first rounder, I can get Carson Wentz back playing at a high level. Got a great offensive line. We have to find a new left tackle. Yes, Costanzo for the Colts is retiring, but really good offensive line. Jonathan Taylor is a great young running back. Solid defense. This team already won 11 games last year. We were almost good enough to go with Phillip Rivers on the road and beat the Buffalo Bills in Buffalo. We can win with the right quarterback. Now we've got him. He's a reasonable cost if they can reclaim him and take him back to high-level quarterback play. $47 million owed over the next 2 years, which sounds like a lot of money, but isn't that much in the grand scheme of things when you consider what top quarterbacks are making now. So there are lots of reasons, I believe, to be optimistic if you're a Colts fan. More difficult to be optimistic if you're an Eagles fan. The positive for the Eagles is instead of going towards something, you are freeing yourself from something. So the story is different. The Eagles, much like the Rams, gave too much money to a quarterback too soon. The Rams got out of their deal by trading Jared Goff to the Detroit Lions, and now the Eagles are getting out of their deal by moving on from Wentz and trading him to the Colts. But you're moving on from something before you can go to something else. What we don't know for the Eagles is what's your plan going forward? Are the Eagles going to be committed to Jalen Hurts and they believe that he is their quarterback of the future as he enters year two coming off of being a second-round draft pick? Or are the Eagles, who memorably tanked on the season to allow Washington to win the division, to move up to the number 6 overall pick, going with a brand new coach to decide to let him have his pick of the litter? And maybe there is a quarterback at number 6 overall that immediately the Eagles are going to go to. We just don't know what the Eagle plan to potentially make the playoffs is going to be in the near future. So that is why I think you have to side with the Colts as having the better pathway to making the playoffs, having a championship, and or why I believe they are the winner as we sit here in the first morning after this trade has been announced and wait to see what is going to happen going forward. NFC East, by the way, big picture, don't know what's going to happen with Dak in Dallas. Don't know whether or not with the Giants, Daniel Jones is the answer. Washington probably not going to be with Heinicke and certainly not with Alex Smith for any long-range future. So the Washington football team's quarterback position is wide open. And we don't really know what the Eagles are going to do. It could be Jalen Hurts. They could be going back into the draft. We don't really know much about quarterbacks right now in the NFC East. It's probably, in addition to being one of the worst divisions in football last year, one of the most unclear at the quarterback position going forward. In the AFC South, We now have a situation where Deshaun Watson, we're unsure exactly what's going to happen with him in Houston. With Trevor Lawrence probably headed to Jacksonville, the Jags and Urban Meyer are building towards something more substantial, particularly if Trevor Lawrence is going to be successful. The Titans still feel pretty good, I think, about Ryan Tannehill and where they are going forward with both Derrick Henry coming back at running back after going for 2,000 yards, and then also A.J. Brown, number one overall receiver, kind of established. Feel pretty good about that if you're the Titans. And then, as we just mentioned, the Colts making a run. They won 11 games last year, lost the tiebreak to the Titans. Feel like, I imagine, that they are getting younger and better at the quarterback position with Carson Wentz replacing Phillip Rivers. Big storyline, big picture. NFL, 2009 to 2016. Think about this. I want you to follow me along here. 22 quarterbacks drafted in the first round during those 8 years. 2009 to 2016. 22 first-round quarterbacks. Every single one of them is now on a new team or out of the league. Let me repeat that. Probably $1 billion spent in total contracts on those 22 quarterbacks. None of them are on the team that drafted them in the first round. That is a staggering statistical data point. Even the people who are supposed to be the best at analyzing the quarterback position, even they fail 0 for 22 in terms of having a big-time success on every first-round draft pick, 2009, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, and 16, 8 years of data, and they can't figure out what they're doing still 0 for 22 on first-round draft picks. I teased this as we went to break. For those of you out there who are just waking up, you may not have heard anything about this. Positive news. Wall Street Journal. So first of all, this storyline, the Hall of Fame game in Canton, Ohio, is saying that on August 5th, they anticipate having a full crowd of fans to go watch the Pittsburgh Steelers play against the Dallas Cowboys. And that will be the first full crowd for a football game since all the way back to the Super Bowl that was played in Miami over a year ago. So it's still into the future quite a bit in August, but the NFL, and I've said this for a while, I think if you look at all the data, every college and pro football stadium, in my mind, should have a full crowd when we get to the fall. And I think there will be some baseball teams that will have full crowds by some point in July. That's my forecast based on looking at the data. Well, why do I believe that? Because of the data and the story that it is telling us. This morning in the Wall Street Journal, a article that went up, I guess right after midnight, the headline is, we'll have herd immunity by April. And then the subheadline is COVID cases have dropped 77% in 6 weeks. Experts should level with the public about the good news. Let me give you some of the takeaways here from this article and why it could be so impactful for the world of sports. First of all, people want to know, well, who's writing the piece? Okay. This is a professor at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine and a Bloomberg School of Public Health. He's a big-time expert, in quotation marks, a doctor, Dr. Macari. I'm not sure if you pronounce it Macari or McCary. I'm not sure exactly how you pronounce it. But this is his article in this morning's Wall Street Journal. And I'm going to give you some of the data. Opening paragraph. Amid the dire COVID warnings, one crucial fact has been largely ignored. Cases are down 77%. Over the past 6 weeks. If a medication slashed cases by 77%, we'd call it a miracle pill. Why is the number of COVID cases plummeting much faster than experts predicted? And his argument is, in large part, because of herd immunity. Okay, and I'm going to give you some of the data that he believes. As of this week, he says, 15% of Americans have received the vaccine, and the figure is rising fast. They think that there will be 250 million doses delivered to 150 million people by the end of March. That is outstanding progress as it comes to the vaccine. But there is also a lack of discussion about the number of people that have already had and been exposed to COVID. In fact, this doctor says the numbers indicate that roughly 2/3 of the U.S. population has already had COVID. And he says, if you consider that in conjunction with the number of people that are getting the vaccine, then we're finally reaching herd immunity. In fact, he says the consistent and rapid decline in daily cases since January 8th, which was when cases peaked, can be explained only by natural immunity. Behavior didn't suddenly improve over the holidays. Americans traveled more over Christmas than they had since March. Vaccines also don't explain the steep decline in January because vaccination rates were low and they take weeks to kick in. As a result of all of this data analysis, and we'll have an article up about this at OutKick. You can also, again, go read it at the Wall Street Journal. This doctor says, my prediction is that COVID will be mostly gone by April. That's based on laboratory data, mathematical data, published literature, and conversations with experts. But it's also based on direct observation of the situation on the ground right now in the United States. And he says that people in America are afraid, experts are afraid to discuss the fact that herd immunity is here, but that we are rapidly moving towards a end to this COVID situation. Really interesting read. Again, I would encourage you to check it out. And again, his perspective is that there are just many, many more cases of COVID that have been experienced than anybody is able to realize. And that's why cases are down, which is an objective truth. Cases are down 77% over the past 6 weeks since they peaked on January the 8th. All right, so that is very much of a positive. It would mean that at some point, if he's right, if this writer in the Wall Street Journal, this doctor at Johns Hopkins, is right, it would mean that full stadiums for Major League Baseball are not that far away on the horizon. And that basically this COVID pandemic, which has overtaken the country and thoroughly changed the way that sports are played, is going to be a thing of the past much sooner than most are discussing right now. Okay, so that is a good start to your Friday as we head into the weekend. Again, the data that I'm reflecting and reading from in today's Wall Street Journal as it pertains to the 77% decline in the overall number of COVID cases over the last 6 weeks. A couple of these we're going to get to as we go to break here. We're going to be joined by Joe Kinsey, one of my writers at OutKick.
This is OutKick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Joe, we were just talking about, as we went to break, you're an Ohio guy. And I give credit to the NFL Pro Football Hall of Fame. They came out and said, hey, our game on August 5th, we expect for it to be a sold-out football stadium. Do you think, as an Ohioan, that Ohio fans of all sports are ready to be back in by August? I think it's 100% certainty. I mean, I think every football game is going to be full. But I love that somebody's actually coming out and saying it. As an Ohioan, does this make you proud? This is the first that somebody said, hey, we want a full stadium in a while.
Clay, things are getting back to normal here in Ohio. They pulled the curfew has been lifted. The bars are allowed to stay open till 2 in the morning. Downtowns are revitalizing themselves by people drinking. So, listen, by August, the end of August, if we're not full of if the stadiums aren't full, something's wrong here. We have fans in Cleveland at Cavs games. We've had some fans at some hockey games. So things are getting, you know, slowly. But, I mean, come on. I mean, the governor of Ohio is signaling that things are in order. and we're rolling along here. And how great would that be if in early August we had a full stadium? It'd be beautiful.
I think we're going to have full stadiums even before then. I mean, I was reading, and we'll get this up on Outkick, a breakdown of the doctor who is saying basically, hey, herd immunity is close and not very far away. And if that's true, I think Major League Baseball, and I've been saying this for a while, but I think by July in Major League Baseball, I think some stadiums are going to be back fully open with fans present.
I agree. Absolutely, Clay. You can see, you can get that sense from baseball after they had the playoffs or World Series in Texas. You could see the writing on the wall that they're signaling they're going to come back. So let's get some spring training going, and then let's fill some stadiums. I'm ready to go.
You're in Ohio where it's been super cold, but it's been super cold everywhere, which usually it's not, you know, in mid-February in Texas, for instance, or Mississippi or Tennessee or some of these places in the South. Pitchers and catchers reporting is like manna from heaven, right? I mean, especially if you're in a cold weather jurisdiction, it makes you feel like, hey, spring is not that far away.
Oh, you have no idea. I haven't seen green grass in a while, Clay, so I will watch the spring training coverage just to see green grass and like sunshine, because you know we don't see the sun very often here in February and January.
Yeah,
and so like March rolls around and I'm like, oh man, this is awesome. And then we'll get like 6 inches of snow on like March 28th. So you know, we take the little wins here and there. And by the way, now that I see that college football is back this weekend with the FCS, I mean, this is really starting to all build up here. Like, there's stuff for us guys that don't watch the NBA. I love this.
So you're talking about college football. This is a story. You wrote about it. I don't think it's getting that much attention. The vast majority of players that are entering the transfer portal in college football are not finding anywhere to go. Only 28% of them so far, and a lot of those guys have been moving from FBS down to FCS. In other words, from higher level college football to a lower level of competition. There just aren't a lot of scholarships to be had, right? And I think this is going to turn into a big story because they basically don't count. This COVID season didn't count for eligibility. You've got a whole new class of freshmen that are now coming in. And so you've got many different programs out there that just don't have scholarships to be able to give out to anybody to allow them to transfer in.
Now, I'm not a college football, you know, I'm not a big analyst here, Clay, but I can follow the numbers. And they're saying that they can bring in 25 freshmen. Then you have your six-year seniors, your COVID seniors. You have all these guys that are starting to pile up on these rosters, and there's just nowhere to go. And so there are now over, I believe it's 125 quarterbacks that went into the transfer portal for 2021. 120-some quarterbacks. Like, what are you going to do here? There's got to be something has to break, and what we're seeing is the transfer portal guys are getting screwed here. Well, it's their own fault in a lot of cases. They're looking to go to greener grass or try to find somewhere to go. There's nothing available. Yesterday we had Joe Milton, the Michigan quarterback. He went into the portal. Who knows what's going on at Michigan? They can't keep a quarterback. Now Milton's looking for somewhere to go. These FCS schools, they're in the middle of their season starting tomorrow or in some cases tonight. So you have chaos in the portal, and who knows where everybody's going to end up. Didn't Tennessee get a quarterback out of the portal, Clay?
Yeah, Virginia Tech had a player transfer, and it'll be interesting to see how exactly that transfer process goes. But, yeah, basically we've reached college football free agency, and I think what a lot of people are going to be surprised by is – I don't think there's going to be that. You have to be a pretty proven player in order to be able to transfer, and there to be a lot of people, I think, lining up for you, because roster management is going to be an absolute mess for so many different teams out there to try to figure out exactly what the roster is going to look like with all these complicating factors. Speaking of which, by the way, which side of the equation would you rather be on right now? Would you rather be a Colts fan waking up with Carson Wentz this morning, or would you rather be an Eagles fan waking up knowing that you no longer have to pay Carson Wentz? And you get the draft picks.
I think it's Eagles. I think they win this, Clay. Get out of that contract. Get that trouble out of their system. Restart their team here. I mean, they're just like in limbo constantly. And do we know what Carson Wentz is going to – do we know he's going to be healthy enough to last an entire season?
He hasn't been lately. That's fair.
Yeah, the Colts – I think the Colts, you know, they're taking a huge risk, you know, set their team back a couple years if he doesn't work out. So give me the Eagles. And by the way, I mean, who won the NFC East last year? Like, you don't need to have that great of a team to win it. So get rid of Wentz, and let's go win the East.
All right, we got a bunch of different stories that you've been working on. Let's start here. You've been writing about all of the use. They were like the sirens. I don't know what you would call them. Like the girls in the 90s who were superstars. Britney Spears is back now with this documentary. But Selma Hayek, who became famous basically because she was with a snake in From Dusk Till Dawn, if I remember correctly, goes viral. Everybody is in love with her. She's 53 years old, and she's married to a rich guy, and she's come back on Instagram lately just firing away.
Clay, there's not a week that goes by that there's not a Selma Hayek storyline. The storyline this week is that people are mad at Selma. They think she married her husband, who's not the, you know, he's not the most glamorous looking dude in the world. They think that she married him for his money. However, they're going on 15 years of marriage. She's telling her haters to suck it. She doesn't want to hear it from her haters. She's calling his name's Francois Henry.
But isn't Selma Hayek super rich herself? Like, I don't buy into...
Exactly.
Yeah, if you're... I mean, I understand. Like, there's a difference between being a billionaire and being a millionaire. But I would imagine that Selma Hayek's life is pretty good from a financial perspective. So I think it's hard to blame somebody or accuse somebody of marrying for money when they're already rich themselves.
Right, and would she stay with the guy just for his money for 15 years? I highly doubt that. Speaking of that, like Larry King, we know that he's been married. He was married 7 times. I mean, these women.
What did Larry King
do
in his will? I haven't even clicked on that story yet. But I saw Larry King, who died recently. Like there was a surprise in his will.
Yeah, he wrote his estranged wife in 2019. He was going to go through a divorce with Sean King, his 7th wife. He wrote her right out of his estate, and
she didn't know.
She had no idea until he died.
Wow, that is like that's cold-blooded to basically slap an insult on your spouse like from the grave, right? Like, I mean, that is a tough blow.
Yeah, she's fired up. It was Clay. The estate was $2 million. I was thinking Larry would have a little bit more.
That's
than
all
that.
The money he had.
Well, that's the estate. Now I don't know about trust funds. I don't know about all that. But as far as the estate goes, it was $2 million. She was going to get $300,000. She's fired up. She says it's just about principle. She wants her $300,000. So
it's wild to me that Larry King could have been as successful as he was in his career. And I understand he had a bunch of different ex-wives, and they probably took a lot of the money and a bunch of kids and everything else. But that he would die with only $2 million seems insane to me. I mean, that's a guy probably that was making $10 million a year back in the day, wasn't he?
Clay, he had a huge monster contract back in like 2008, 2009. I don't know. I need to dig into it more, see where Larry's money went, see where it's all at.
This is NBA player-like for Larry. I mean, to make as much money as he did, this is like, was it Antoine Walker who made like $100 million and went bankrupt? I mean, this is basically what Larry King did if he's only got $2 million left.
Like, I mean, could you imagine? He's only splitting up $2 million. It's not, you know... That's chump change for Larry. Come on,
it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's a crazy story. But she's fired up. She wants her money, and they're going to go to court over it. So Larry's not done.
Yeah, no. I've got a bunch of your stories here that I'm scrolling through as well. We're talking to Joe Kinsey. You can go follow him on Twitter at JoeKinseyEXP if you want to make sure that you follow him as he's breaking down everything. I saw this video. We actually should play the audio of this at some point. But in St. Louis, big storm, winter storm, obviously hitting all over the country. Guy goes on a corn dog run for his wife, who asked, said she wanted corn dogs, risks his life so that he could go find some corn dogs.
Yeah, she says that the news station overplayed this a little bit. He wasn't really risking his life. Yes, it was a snowstorm, but she says it was just around the block to go get the corn dogs. Tom, you know, this is guys at their best, right? They want to battle the elements. They want to go out there and see what they're made of and prove that they can go get corn dogs for their wife. Tom goes out, straps on the work boots. He's out in the elements. He goes to the store, and the news station's right there, and they want to comment. And he's like, listen, I had to go get corn dogs for my wife, and I put my life on the line. And so great story out there for the guys that do it for their wives. Even if it's something like just a corn dog.
We're talking to Joe Kinsey at Joe Kinsey EXP is where you can find him on Twitter. We yesterday on the show had a small business owner from Bristol, Virginia, who lives across the street from the small businesses in Bristol, Tennessee. You wrote up about it. It blew up and really went viral. How crazy is this? And I'm positive, like, I'll hit you again with the Wall Street Journal article in the next segment, for those of you who don't know it, that we're close to herd immunity, hopefully. 77% decline in cases of COVID over the last 6 weeks. All of that is very positive. But when you see that we have these regulations that are still in place, Bristol, Virginia, Bristol, Tennessee, for those of you who aren't familiar with the geography, a street separates the state. So the two states, one side is Virginia, one side is Tennessee. Virginia side, bars and restaurants have to close at 10 p.m. Tennessee side, bars and restaurants are allowed to open until 2 a.m. All of this COVID policy and its impact on small business, I believe much of it has been totally illogical.
Yeah, the story here is the guys own a restaurant there on the one side, and they would sit there and watch the customers have to leave at 10 o'clock and walk across the street and start sucking down beers across the street. They could literally watch these guys in the businesses across the street. So they're asking for the governor of Virginia, listen, let's get this stuff opened up. We're watching our competitors kill us here, and they need some help. And also they were saying, I went back and listened to it, they're saying, listen, you're trying to put D.C. regulations on Southern Virginia. Come on, it's ridiculous.
So, Joe, outstanding stuff as always. Appreciate you getting up early for us. Look forward to all the work. What are you working on right now? What's the big screen caps you do to start off the morning? What should we be aware of from the OutKick perspective?
We have a Hooters waitress off, and we have Philly fans saying goodbye to Carson Wentz as only Philly fans can, so you don't want to miss that.
There you go. Boom. It should be up shortly. It's one of the best ways to start your morning online at OutKick.com. Good stuff as always, my man. Thanks.
All right. See you.
This is OutKick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Final segment, Montel Jordan singing the tunes as he always does for the final segment of the week. And we're finishing the segment, finish of the week in style here with some Animal Thunderdome. Cue the music.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I'm just glad I was there.
Boys and girls.
I thought he thought I was like this ginormous piece of chicken.
Dying time's here.
I had a boa constrictor stuck to my face.
Man, you have a what?
This is Animal Thunderdome.
All right, Danny G, what do you got for me?
All right, prepare to be uncomfortable with this first story. An Alaska woman had the scare of a lifetime. She went to an outhouse in Alaska backcountry. She says, I got out there and sat down on the toilet, and immediately something bit my butt right as I sat down. What do you think it was, Clay?
I'm sure it was a snake, because this is my worst nightmare. You go to the toilet, next thing you know, you're getting bit by a snake.
This might surprise you. Her name is Shannon Stevens. She told the AP yesterday, I jumped up and I screamed when it happened. Stevens, her brother Eric, and his girlfriend had taken snowmobiles into the wilderness to stay at his yurt. It's kind kind of like a portable hut.
Yeah.
Located 20 miles northwest of Haines in southeast Alaska. Her brother heard the screaming. He went out to the outhouse. There he found his sister bleeding. They at first thought she had been bitten by a squirrel, a mink, or something
small. Do they have snakes in a lot of snakes in Alaska? I don't even know the answer to that.
Kind of what I'm getting to, because this was not a snake.
It's too cold.
Eric brought his headlamp out to see what it was. He says, I opened the toilet seat, and there was a black bear's face just right there at the level of the toilet seat, just looking right back up through the hole right at me, he said. I shut the lid as fast as I could. There's a bear down there, I screamed. We got the hell out of there, and we ran back to the yurt as fast as we could. Once safely inside, they treated his sister with a first aid kit. It wasn't too serious, but she was bleeding.
She got bitten by a bear while going to the bathroom.
Yes. This, as you can imagine, is unheard of. Alaska Department of Fish and Game Wildlife Manager Carl Koch says, as far as getting swatted on the butt when you're sitting down in winter, she could be the only person on Earth that this has ever happened to, as far as a black bear, for all I know, Koch said.
Yeah, that's not, I mean, that's, I never thought I had to be worried about a bear.
She says, I'm just going to get better about looking inside the toilet now before sitting down.
You know, yeah, that's a crazy story. I also don't know that the yurt would be very safe from a bear.
Right, because they're like bamboo / wood.
Right, I mean, they're not like, I mean,
it's like a huff and puff and blow your
exactly.
bamboo house
You would
house
think
down.
That if a bear wanted to knock down a yurt, a bear could knock down a yurt. I'm supposed to go camping in potentially a yurt with my kids here soon. And I hope I don't have to deal with that at all. Or maybe a tent. I don't know. There's a dad and son camp out that I've got in a couple of weeks. And the thing I'm most concerned about, I hadn't been concerned about bears, is cold. Because it's been so frigid, the last thing I want to do is be sleeping outside anywhere. So that has been the bigger concern for me. But that's pretty terrifying.
And by the way, they figure the bear got inside the outhouse through an opening at the bottom of the back door. They think it was like a little den for the winter time.
Ah, it's probably a little bit warmer, I guess, maybe there. Yeah. I don't know.
Not a very nice smelling
place.
Den.
Yeah, you wouldn't think.
All right, and then I texted you and Roberto a picture of this python.
Yes.
Ah, this family in Central Florida found this huge Burmese python literally piled on itself in layers on their property, almost 17 feet long.
Ugh.
Look at the size of that thing.
I looked at the picture of this thing. But so this is what's happened in Florida. There are all these pythons that are just running loose, right?
Right.
All throughout Florida.
Yeah, it's because of bad pet owners. They get these things, they get too big, and then they release them.
And it's warm enough in Florida for the pythons not to all die, right?
Right. And this, by the way, is reportedly one of the largest in state history. They euthanized it and found out that it was carrying 100 eggs.
Ugh. 17-foot female python with 100 eggs.
This guy and his kids, there's a picture. I'll tweet it out at Danny G Radio, and I'll tag you at Clay Travis. They lay a foot to head to show how long the snake is. I think not only would you burn the snake and where the snake was, I think you would burn the entire property.
This is the, I'll just say this. This is the only advantage of a deep freeze. Like, the freeze really didn't reach Florida. It stayed warm, I think, relatively speaking, in the state of Florida. But if there were ever a super deep freeze in Florida, I think the only advantage would be that we might kill a lot of these pythons that are otherwise running rampant. I mean, because Central Florida, I mean, this is up near Orlando, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we knew that they were like in the Everglades and down in South Florida. But as you move up to Central Florida, if there are just 17-foot pythons just hanging out in the woods, I mean, that is just absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, and if you're wondering, the record is an almost 19-foot-long python, which was caught last summer.
In Florida.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, when they supposedly
200 pounds.
Now, I do think you're right that a lot of snake owners just can't keep up with their snakes and they let them out and everything else. But this all really got started in many ways when, according to many people, Hurricane Andrew. Do you remember Hurricane Andrew back in the early 90s?
Of course,
so devastating in South Florida that many different homes and many different pet stores and everything else just got wiped out and the animals were unleashed into the wild. So that is one argument for how all these invasive species, including the python, became so paramount and so prominent in Florida, because it's so warm that they can all thrive and live there, even if they're not a natural native. By the way, did you know this? I was reading about this recently. I think I've talked about it on the radio before. The honeybee is an invasive species. There were no bees in America. They were brought here from Europe, and they worked their way over the course of hundreds of years all the way across the entire country. Do you know that?
No.
Well, wouldn't you have thought like the honeybee is just naturally in America? No, no, no. They brought it over from Europe. It had never been here. It's worked its way all the way across. So sometimes there's a positive addition to the species. Same thing with rats, I think. I think there were no rats in America prior to European settlers coming here. And now they've obviously worked their way across the whole country.
Pretty sure you wouldn't want to collect this, but that python carcass was given to python hunter and Discovery Channel TV personality Dusty Crum of Guardians of the Glades.
What does he do with the python?
He must put them up in his cabin.
Well, that's weird. I mean...
Well, he is a Discovery Channel dude. So.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it works for him. I have no interest in snakes, either dead or alive. I do have interest in all of you and hope, thank you for the Animal Thunderdome, Danny G. I hope that all of you will download the podcast Clay Travis or Outkick. Search it out. Go give us 5 stars. Danny G is going to give you some 5-star reviews. Gold stars come next week. We'll make sure that we hit that. I hope all of you have fantastic weekends, and I hope you start to warm up wherever you are. Hope things get back to normal from a weather perspective sooner rather than later. Appreciate all of you. Was expecting to be in Mexico, but had a good time hanging out with you guys instead because I'm snowed in. Double winter storm warnings. This has been Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick, the coverage with Clay Travis, weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.